Erev Tov, everybody. Pleasure to welcome everybody in our ongoing Parshat HaShavuah, weekly Parshat HaShavuah by Torah in Motion. And it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Shlomo Gemara, I think his second time with us on Zoom. Rabbi Gemara, as many of you know, is the vice principal at Tannenbaum Chat, where I personally teach as just a regular teacher, and which is the largest community high school in North America with over 1,200 kids. Rabbi Gemara began his teaching career, I guess, unfortunately, you can say, during the Yom Kippur War, when as a teenager, or even younger than a teenager, there weren't enough people to teach in the classroom. So he helped out, and that's launched his career as a wonderful mechanech. And Rabbi Gemara has been in Toronto since 1993. He served for many years as the Rosh Yeshiva of the B'nai Akiva schools. I think this is, what, your sixth year in chat, if I'm not mistaken?
Fifth year, actually.
Okay, and Bakasha, a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Gemara for Parshat Pekudei. Bakasha.
Toda rabba. This is not an easy parsha, you know, to find the shiur, but we will try to do our best, because it's a lot of detail, and we start with Ele Pekudei Mishkan, Mishkan Ha'edut. Actually, we are giving a report. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest person ever lived, has to report when it comes to funds of the public. No one is above suspicion. And even Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah is teaching us a great lesson here when it comes to the, you know, to the public, to the community. Everyone has to give a report. And that's exactly what the Torah is doing here. After Bnei Yisrael collected gold and silver and copper and all other materials, it's their right and Moshe's duty to report back what did they do with all the funds they collected, which is a great lesson by itself. And indeed, the Torah starts with a detailed account, what happened to all the material that Bnei Yisrael brought in order to build the Mishkan. And indeed, the Torah is giving us, since I'm a little bit dinosaur with this technology, did you get the link to the shiur?
I put it in the chat box. Yeah, it's in the chat box.
So it is in the chat box?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So if you open source number one, and again, please don't hesitate to let me know if you don't able to, you are not able to open it. That's makes sense, because even to me, it's a little bit hard. And unfortunately, as I told Rabbi Kelman this morning, regretfully, I'm not very good in building a source sheet from Sepharia, which is a fantastic site and helps actually lecturer to build their own source sheet. I simply don't know how to do it. I am going to do it. So I had just to take the links that hopefully you can open. So what you have in this sheet that I send is, I think, 14 sources, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully, we are going to cover some of them, hopefully over half of them. So what you do, you just click on the source. We are now in source number one, and you will see that there is a link to where you have to click again and to get it. So for example, just to show it, and I'm going to share my screen with you right now, if it's possible. Hopefully yes. Okay, I share it here. So you see this one, source number one. I click on it, and right away you see here WW Sepharia. I click this one, and I will go to source number one. Let's see, what do we get here? It's loading, and this is Perek Lamedchet. We are going a little bit down. I think it's 20-something, if I'm not mistaken, where we start Ele Pekudei HaMishkan. You see here, it's 22 here. Everyone is with me. It's okay. Wonderful. Okay. So we start with the gold. Kol hazav asui lamelacha, all the gold that was used for the work, in all the work of the sanctuary, the elevation offering of gold, And the Torah is telling us exactly how much gold they collected. Interestingly enough, this is not the topic of this lesson. We don't get an account what was done with the gold. You don't see here the menorah. You don't see here the Aron that was covered, plated with gold. But you have an exact number of how much gold was used to it. Why is it so? You can see the Mefarshim, as I said, this is not the topic right now. Kesep Pkudei Aida, the silver of those of the community who were recorded, came to 100 talents and 1,775 shekel b'shekel HaKodesh. And here, by the way, with the silver, as you can see in Pasuk 28, we actually know what they did with the silver. The 100 talents of silver were for casting the sockets of the sanctuary and the sockets for the curtain. So we know what was done with this silver. We are going to the third one. You know, it's like the almost like the medals in the Olympics, like you have the gold, you have the silver. Now it's almost the bronze. Nechoshet HaTnufa, the copper from the elevation offering, 70 kikar, 2,400 shekel. And again, like in silver, the Torah is detailing what was done with the copper. Vayas ba'et adnei petachu el moed, of it, he made the sockets for the entrance of the tent of meeting, the copper altar and its copper grating, and all the utensils of the altar. And then the sockets of the chatzer, before we talked about the inner one, now we are talking about the chatzer. So all the sockets of the enclosure round about, and the sockets of the gate of the enclosure, and so on. And then we are going to the tchelet and the argaman, all the fabrics. If one of you is dealing with auditing, I think that you are going to notice that something big is missing here from the report of the copper. So we are talking about the adanim, the sockets. We are talking about the mizbach hanechoshet that was made of copper, the altar, a major structure. The klei mizbeach, all the utensils for the altar, also from nechoshet. Sorry, what is missing here? Actually, a massive structure from Nechoshet.
The Kior.
The Kior, exactly. The Kior is completely missing. We don't find any report about it. We know that Moshe was commanded to build a Kior, a basin. I don't know what the right word for the Kior, because some say labor, some say basin. So what would you prefer me to say? Or Kior?
Kior is fine.
The Kior. So this is a massive structure holding lots of water, because when the Kohanim are coming into the Mishkan for their service, they go through a special ritual. It's more than we do with, you know, Netilat Yadayim. It's Netilat Yadayim Veraglayim. And they needed quite a big amount of water, which was contained in this container that we call Kior. And not a word about it. Not a word about the Nechoshet regarding the Kior, which is interesting. If we go to source number 2, let me just load it. I just want to prove that indeed the basin was done of Kior Nechoshet. Vasita Kior Nechoshet, make a laver of copper and the stand of copper for it, because it was not just standing on the ground. It was like on a basis of copper. And it was, as I say, quite a massive structure. I would assume that the Kior took more Nechoshet, more copper than even the Mizbeach. It was quite a big big structure. But there is another anomaly with the Kior, because let's see where this mitzvah to Moshe about the kior is stated not with the rest of the utensils for the Mishkan. It's not like with the menorah, with the Aaron, with the Shulchan. No. Actually, I'll just show you here on Sefaria. If you remember, we just read it last week. We are talking about the Parsha of Kitisa. We are talking about collecting the money from Bnei Israel. And then the Torah said, oh, you know what? I forgot something important, which is, you see here, Kitisa et Rosh Bnei Israel Ifkudeim that we read. So we are taking Machatzit HaShekel B'Shekel HaKodesh. We finished in Parshat Truma all the kelim. We finished in Parshat Tetzaveh all the clothes. And from nowhere, in Parshat Kitisa, after we are talking about collecting the money, the Machatzit HaShekel, then the Torah said, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Vasita kiyon nechoshet, make a laver of copper and a stand of copper. Why? This is part of the Mishkan. This should appear in the Parsha of Terumah with all the other kelim of the Mishkan. Why the Torah pushed it to the middle of Parshat Kitisa, away from all the other structures of the Mishkan? What's going on here? Okay, so we presented already two issues with the kior. The first one, as I said, there is no report that it was made of nechoshet, number one. The Torah does not count it in the report of Moshe, what he did with all the copper. The kior is not there, number one. Number two, the commandment about the kior is mentioned separately from all the other kelim of the Mishkan. I will tell you another one, which even Chazal could not figure from the version. You know, we know how all the vessels of the Mishkan were carried in the Midbar. They had like two sticks. There is different between the Aaron and other ones, but we know that they were carried by sticks as they made their journey in the desert. You will not find any description or any instruction of the Torah how to carry the kior. Very, very interesting. And Chachamim themselves are not sure how it was carried, because there is no mitzvah of two sticks to build and to carry the kior. So Chachamim say they have to conclude that somehow they threw it on the agalot, on the wagons, and that's how it was carried, with no glory, with no special way to carry it. You know, the Torah described that they were covered with tchelet and argaman. It was beautiful to see even when they were covered. The kior, nothing. What happened with this kior that does not deserve the normal attitude that the Torah gives to all the other kelim in the Mishkan? So let's go to source number three. Source number three is a famous commentator. This is a Sforno from Italy. Say the Sforno. Let's take like a 10 seconds so everyone can open it. It's source number three. Ve'asita kiyor, gam ze akli, say the Sforno. You should know that this vessel, lo uzkar lemala, in the previous parshiot, im sh'ar akelim. So this is the second question that we raised. Why the commandment to build the kiyor was not mentioned with all the rest of the Mishkan? Ki lo haita hakavana bo, Le'ashkin shchina b'mikdash. After all, the kior did not serve for hashra'at shchina, for the presence of God in the mikdash. It was a secondary vessel. It's not the menorah. Hashem presented himself in the Mishkan, or the shchina presented itself in the Mishkan through the menorah, through the Aaron, through the Shulchan. These were certain aspects of the representation of Shekhinah, of dwelling of Hashem in the Mishkan. The kior didn't. The kior was something different. Aval, say the Sforno, Aita, Kavanah, the purpose of the kior was lehachin et hakohanim lavodatam. It's a secondary issue. It's just like use for the use of the kohanim. In other words, the Sforno is telling us that the kior was secondary to all the other kelim. While all the other kelim had the purpose of Ashra'at HaShchina, they helped in a way or carried the presence of Hashem in the Mishkan. The Kior had a very secondary job. It was just to prepare the Kohanim. They had to wash their hands, their legs, in order to make them ready for serving in the Mishkan. Therefore, there is no issue to make the Kior something big. Therefore, the Torah does not include it with all the other Kelim of the Mishkan. There is no need to report it with all the other things that Moshe Rabbeinu did. And, there is no need even to tell you how it was carried from one place to another. Who cares? It was just like a secondary issue, and then you schlep it somehow. The Torah does not have to waste too much time and too many psukim to tell you how it was carried from one place to another. It doesn't worth it, so to speak. Anyone have like a problem with this or no? I'll tell you what is my problem in presenting the Kior in a secondary role in the Mishkan. Number one, the story that we just learned, like about reporting what was done with the Nechoshet, with the Koper. Okay, fine. I understand the Kior was not as important as the menorah, but it had nothing to do with the report, what you did with the Koper. If it's important or not, it's not the issue here. The issue here that Moshe Rabbeinu has to tell Bnei Israel, listen, I took 70 kikar of koper. I want to tell you what I did with it. So, okay, the kior was not important, but he used the koper to do the kior after all. Therefore, he should report. This is one difficulty that I find with the Sforno. A second difficulty that I find with the Sforno is if indeed the criteria is what helped to contain the Shechina of Hashem in the Mikdash, like the menorah, like the Aaron, like the Shulchan, why the Torah report about the Yeteidot HaMishkan? We learn, the Torah is telling us that what did they do with it? The Adnei Petach Ohel Moed, the sockets for the pillar that were in the entrance to Ohel Moed. Was the sockets a vessel for Hashra'at Shechina? It's like the menorah, it's like the Aron. It's also not like part of the main purpose of the Mishkan of Hashra'at Shechina. And nevertheless, the Torah is telling us about the Adnei Petach Ohel Moed. The Torah is telling us about the Klei HaMizbeach, all the servants for the altar. So how does Sforno say that the criteria is something that contain the presence of Hashem, and therefore the Kior did not contain or did not reside the glory of Hashem, therefore it's not mentioned. What about the pegs? What about the socket? They were the same. And nevertheless, the Torah mentioned it. So something does not sit well with this Forno, and the way we see the Kior, I think. By the way, another mystery of the Kior, the name of this Shiur is that there are no instructions how to build the Kior. If you have any picture in your mind, it's because some Mefarshim or artists try to describe you how the basin, how this Kior looked like. But in the Torah itself, it just said that should be a Kior, and somehow Moshe had to figure it out. Now, according to the Sforno, that's quite understandable. There is no point to say that it's going to be like, round, and it has to be like 4 amot or 2 amot or 1 amah. Who cares? It just has to contain water, and we don't care how the Kior looks like. Give the artist like freehand to design a nice container that can hold that amount of water. So again, this is another anomaly with the Kior. It's one of the kelim that is not described at all in the Mishkan. You have to do a Mishkan. It consumed a serious amount of koper, and nevertheless, the Torah does not give any instruction how the Kior looks like. Should it be squared? Should it be round? Should it be triangle? We don't know. I saw that some artists describe it as two tiers fountain. Maybe yes, maybe no. I cannot refute them. I cannot say they're right or wrong because the Torah never told us how the Kior looked like. So this is again we can see that there was something special about the Kiyor, which was unique to the Kiyor. Let's go to source number. Any questions so far? I just want to make sure that we are okay here. No. Let's go to source number 4. So here we have to go actually to a pasuk that is mentioned in Perek Lametchet, pasuk chet. This is actually one of the last pasukim in the previous perek. Unfortunately, I forgot apparently to put it here. We will have to go back here in Exodus Lametchet, pasuk chet. The pasuk say the following thing, which is very interesting. Please pay attention. He made the basin or the laver of copper and its stand of copper from the mirrors of the women who perform tasks at the entrance of the tent of the meeting. The Kiyor was made of copper, but a very special copper. Bamarot hatsovot, which is a very hard expression to understand, but where all the other copper in the Mishkan for the altar, for example, or for the kelim, was made out of molten coins or other pieces of metal, the Kiyor was made of special copper. Marot Hatzovot. What are Marot Hatzovot? Mar'a, in Hebrew, a mirror. Tzovot, not so clear. But we do know that apparently the women, Tzovot, the women who gathered, because Litzvot Tzava means to gather people together, Asher Tzavu Petach Oel Moed, according to Chachamim, Marot Hatzovot meant the mirrors of the women who gathered in the entrance to Ohel Moed. What does that mean? So I want to show you the Ibn Ezra. I hope you are not going, especially the women are not going to be too upset with the Ibn Ezra. This is porno, but it's very similar to the Ibn Ezra, which you have actually on your source sheet. So he said, "Asher tzavu petach oel moed, lishmoa divrei Elohim chayim." So Torah in Motion is not the first one to allow women to enjoy the same level of learning Torah as men. Actually, it happened already in the desert. We just renew a beautiful minhag that already existed after giving the Torah in Midbar Sinai. There were women who gathered around Ohel Moed to hear lessons of Torah. Keomro, as we know in the pasuk, Vehaya kol mevakesh Hashem yetze el Ohel Moed. The Torah described that in Midbar Sinai, the people really wanted to perfect themselves, to learn more Torah, they were gathered around Ohel Moed. It was not only a place for serving in the Mishkan, but it was also a place of learning Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu went from Ohel Ha'idut and taught the people who came there Torah. Among them were many women, the Anashim Hatzovot. The Otan Anashim, these special women, who came to learn Torah, ma'asu inyanei tachshiteh. The whole issue of jewelry and beauty was completely, had no value in their eyes. And therefore, higdishu mar'otehen lehorot she'inan tzrichin od lahem. You know how they expressed it? The Ibn Ezra that I also brought on the source sheet that you can see here say the following. V'tam atzovot, he said, and the reason that the Torah says hatzovot, these crowds of women, is because women habitually look in the mirror. Of course, we men never look in the mirror. But especially in the time of the Ibn Ezra, we are talking about 900 years ago. So he said, we know that the women look in the mirror made of copper or glass in their time every morning to put their headdress into shape. Now, among the Israelites were certain women dedicated to the service of God, who distanced themselves from worldly desire. They donated their mirrors to the Mishkan, and their mirrors was done from apparently very polished, very bright copper, and they had no further use for beautification. These women would come each day to the entrance of the tent of meeting to pray and to hear the details of the mitzvot. And these crowds near the entrance of the tent are the hatzovot, the people or the women, to be accurate, who gathered around the tent to listen and to learn Torah, referred to in the Torah. So let's try to picture it. Women are coming to the Mishkan. They were so devoted to learning Torah that all issue of like beauty, looking in the mirror every morning in order like to beautify the hair or maybe to put makeup. This is such a nonsense. They took the mirror and they said, you know what? We have nechoshet. We are not interested in this business of beautification. We are going to donate this copper to the Mishkan. And these are the mar'ot atzovot that were made out of copper, that with them, Moshe Rabbeinu built the kior. The kior was from copper, but not the other copper that was brought to the Mishkan. It was a special copper, the copper that was made from the mar'ot of the women who gathered because they disdained all beautification, any desire to look nice, and this is the materials for the cure in the Mishkan. Well, let's explain a little bit why indeed it's not included in the report of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu reported only the regular copper that came to the Mishkan. This was not part of it. This was a special donation of women, righteous women, who brought their mirrors, and the cure was done from these mirrors. And therefore, the report was about the copper that was brought as coins, as jewelry, as other metal of copper, but not this particular donation of the women that was made by Mar'ot Hatzovot. To summarize, the Ibn Ezra and the Sforno who see it in the same way, the Mar'ot Hatzovot were actually a sign of greatness of women who disdain, they did not value anymore the idea to look beautiful. Why do they need it? What Shlomo HaMelech says, Sheker achen, hevel ayofi, it's all vanity. They did not need it. They gave to Moshe Rabbeinu the mirrors, and the cure was done from these mirrors. I don't know how much you like this perush, but I think that Rashi, actually, by the name of Chazal, had a very, very different way to look upon the Mar'ot Hatzovot, and I want to read it with you together. I think it's source number 6. It's a Rashi. What a beautiful, beautiful Rashi, and profound one. So Rashi also tried to explain b'marot atzovot, and by the beautiful perush, he also will explain that indeed the kior was unique, but not as a secondary vessel, but something very, very profound, I would say, in the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel, and Bnei Israel within themselves. Let's read this beautiful Rashi. Says Rashi, Bnot Israel, maybe I will read it. It's such a beautiful Rashi, but maybe You know, I will appreciate if someone read it in English. It will help me a little bit. Bamarot Atzuvot of the Mirrors of the Women Crowding. Any mitnadev or mitnadevet? I would prefer mitnadevet here because this is such a beautiful Rashi that exalt the mesirut nefesh of women to the future of Am Yisrael. So I would appreciate if one of you will read this Rashi. Any volunteer?
Hi.
Yeah, thank you so much.
The Israelitish women possessed mirrors of copper into which they used to look when they adorned themselves. Even these they did not hesitate to bring as a contribution towards the tabernacle. Now Moses was about to reject them since they were made to pander to their vanity. But the Holy One, blessed be He, said to him, "Accept them. These are dearer to me than all the other contributions, because through them the women reared those huge hosts in Egypt. For when their husbands were tired through the crushing labor, they used to bring them food and drink and induce them to eat. Then they would take the mirrors, and each gazed at herself in her mirror together with her husband, saying endearingly to him, 'See, I am handsomer than you.' Thus they awakened their husband's affection and subsequently became the mothers of many children. As it is said in Song 8:5, 'I awakened thy love under the apple tree,' referring to the fields where the men worked. This is what it refers to when it states, the mirrors of the women who reared the hosts." Tzvot. Midrash Tanhuma, Pikutei.
No. So if I can just stop here for a second. So Rashi had a very, very different approach to the Marot Atzuvot. We saw the Ibn Ezra see the Marot Atzuvot as a great sign of understanding the vanity of beauty. Here, according to Rashi, indeed Moshe also thought like this. Like he said, this is inappropriate donation, like the Marot. I know what this Marot were used for. This was the way that actually women seduce their husbands. This is inappropriate in the Mishkan. This is a place of Ashrat Shechina. How can I use it for one of the kelim in the Mishkan? And actually it's self-contradictory because this is for purity. This seems to be impure actions of sexual desires. How can I put it in the Mishkan? And Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you are wrong. You are completely wrong. This donation of the Marot, you don't understand what is behind it. All the people that you see here around, the 600,000 males and all the children, it's all a result from this Marot. It's a sign of hope in a time of despair when everyone saw that's the end of it. You know, I always say we don't understand, like, what is Miriam? The name Miriam, the sister of Moshe Rabbeinu. Miriam comes from Marim, from bitterness. That's the name they gave their children. Because when they were born to horrible times, to bitter times. What is Aharon? I think, I never saw it, but I think it comes from the word in Ivrit, Aharon. You know, people were sure, parents were sure, this is my last son. Because in Hebrew, hey and chet are many times are very interchangeable. Actually, the Yemenite people are saying every chet is chet, something very much like hey. And if you think even about the letter hey and chet, they are very, very similar. It's a small line that separates hey and chet, something that sometimes causes mistakes and problems in the Sefer Torah itself. So, the Marot Atzuvot was, according or in the eyes of Hashem, the most important donation of all the other materials, from the gold, from the silver, from the copper, the Marot Atzuvot, special of all specials. This was the reason why Am Yisrael survived in Mitzrayim. Can you imagine, like, people still building families in Mitzrayim, if not the Mesirut Nefesh of women who use this Marot? For Hashem, it's the greatest thing ever. If you can continue to read it, I will appreciate it. Yeah. And it was
And it was for this reason that the laver was made of them, the mirrors, because it served the purpose of promoting peace between man and wife, vis-a-vis by giving of its waters to be drunk by a woman whose husband had shown himself jealous of her, and who nevertheless had associated with another, from Numbers chapter 5, thus affording her an opportunity to prove her innocence.
So obviously, if I can just stop here, this is obviously the parsha of Sotah. A woman that is suspected in inappropriate behavior. She was brought to the Mikdash. And part of the ceremony, which we are not going to discuss today, part of the ceremony was to take water from the kior and giving her to drink from it. And this was kind of a test if she indeed behaved inappropriately, or maybe the husband is just suspect her for no reason. So basically, through the kio, it was an opportunity to make a peace between the jealous husband and his wife. And again, it's for the same reason, since the ma'ot represent the connection between husband and wife, it was very, very appropriate that the kio will take such an important part in restoring the peace between husband and wife. I'm sorry, this is the last time that I disrupt you. Let's go ahead. Okay. Yeah.
You may know that the mirot mentioned in the text were really mirrors, and that the word does not mean visions or appearance, etc. For it is said in verse 29, and the copper of the wave offering was 70 talents, etc. And therefore, he made the sockets, etc. The laver, however, was made. The laver, however, and its base are not mentioned there amongst the articles made from that copper. Hence, you may learn that the copper of which the laver was made was not a part of the copper of the weave offering, which is the only copper mentioned as having been contributed by the people. Thus did Rabbi Tanhuma explained the term Merot HaTzvot, and so does Onkelos also render it.
B'machazit Nashia. Yeah.
And this first word is the Targum translation of Merot in the sense of mirrors in Old French. For we find that for the word in Isaiah 3:23 and the Gilionim, which are mirrors, we have in the Targum the same word, Machazito.
Right, which is very, very interesting because, this is actually a word in English. The mirror, according to this Rashi, is actually was the best shot when apparently the mirrors appeared. They were looking for a word and they took it from our Parsha. It's actually the root of it is in Hebrew, marot, mem and reish. So they did it mirror or something like this. So this is a very interesting linguistic comment of Rashi, that the mirrors that we have, and it was also in Old French, coming from marot, which keeps the sound of the mem and the resha in Hebrew. So let's just summarize this Rashi. According to Rashi, the marot atzuvot, he agreed with what we saw before by the Ibn Ezra, that it was a special donation. The attitude of the women is very different according to the Ibn Ezra and Rashi. According to the Ibn Ezra, it was because, marot, they don't need anymore from this kind of stuff. Away all the makeup, away all the marot, away all the beautification. According to Rashi, on the contrary, it comes to remind Hashem the time that actually they were so devotedly took upon themselves to continue the Jewish existence in Mitzrayim. And indeed, I would say it was sanctification of the sexual desire in order to continue the existence of Am Yisrael. And therefore, Hashem loved it more than all the other donations. You know, the only question I have, this is fantastic, obviously, but you know, the Pasuk in Pkudei says, Mar'ot Hatzov'ot. That's an expression in Hebrew. And we understood that it's a marot from the women who gathered in the Mishkan. But where Rashi or Rabbi Tanhuma, who lived around 1800 years ago. Like, where did they take this fantastic explanation that, you know, the women brought the mirrors and Hashem said, oh, this is the best, you must accept it, I love it, and they built the kior for me. Where Rabbi Tanchuma, which was a person like me and you, took this idea? How he came with this fantastic idea? This is so important to me that I will stop here for 2 minutes. Please think about it. What do you think? Where, like, it was a tradition that Rabbi Tanchuma had. This is a very elaborative piece of literature. Like, the Torah said marot sovot. He comes and tell you what is the marot. The marot are the mirror that the women in Egypt used in order to seduce their husbands. And tzovot is gathered in the Mishkan. Where did they come with this fantastic story? Where did the Torah actually hint about it? You understand my question? It's a fantastic story. It's really inspiring. But where is it written in the Torah?
Isn't there something about the women gave birth, that the women gave birth in the apple orchards there? Isn't there something? I don't know from where
You are absolutely right. You are quoting a pasuk in Shir HaShirim.
Okay.
But let me tell you something, and Rashi, by the way, quoting this pasuk. But Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, when he wrote Shir HaShirim, he is also a commentator of the Torah. He found somewhere in the Torah this idea that indeed there was a whole story that the women managed to pursue their husband to have sexual relationship and to continue the next generation. So Shlomo HaMelech himself, you are absolutely right. The question will just go to Shlomo HaMelech. Where did he find it in the Torah? And I think it's very, very important, because many, many times we read these stories in Chazal and we ask ourselves, this is beautiful, but it's so fantastic. Like, I have no idea where did they come with this idea.
I have a thought.
Yes, please. Sure.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure how to make the connection, but if I'm not mistaken, Chana was the first to refer to Hashem as Hashem Tzvakot. And maybe there's a connection between using that word to describe the mirrors with Chana, who was, you know, so beautifully davening to Hashem for a child. Maybe there's, and that's the continuity of the Jewish people. Maybe there's some connection there. Maybe
fantastic. This is so, so fantastic. You are absolutely right. If we are going to have some time, Rabbi Kelman, when the shiur is over?
Officially at 9:30.
Okay, so maybe we'll steal another 5 or 10 minutes. Your answer is so beautiful, and indeed, source 13 and 14 actually is talking about Chana, and hopefully we will get there. But I would say the following. Chana herself was a great reader of the Torah. When Chana herself said, Hashem Tzvakot, im tireh be'oni amatecha. And you're right, like, she's talking to Hashem and she asked for a child. She based it on Parashat Pekudei, and I'm going to show you in a second. So she's also a commentator of the Torah. So we have you right. You just, like, bring it now closer to the Torah. We spoke about Rabbi Tanchuma. Then there was the pasuk in Shir HaShirim that speaks about this idea. You brought us even closer, like maybe 300 years to the Torah. You are talking about Chana, but I'm telling you that Tefillah of Chana was based on this pasuk in Parashat Pekudei, and I'm going to show you in a second. So I think the reason is that there is a very unique word here. You know, today it's so easy to draw the attention of the reader. We have highlighters. We can make the letters bold. We can even hyperlink them as I did in this source sheet. It's very, very easy to draw your attention. But the Torah did not have this a kind of opportunity, you know, to highlight words. All the words, all the letters in the Torah, almost all of them, 99% of them look identical to each other. Here and there you have Nun Afucha, You have Vav Zeira. We have some special letters, but they are really special. They are very unique and very few. The only way of the Torah to draw your attention was the sound. Like the recognition that this word is unique. It reminds me something. This word is so unique. It's so out of place that the reader said, I think I heard this word before. And the word tzovot is indeed one of these kind of words. Very rare. You cannot find them in the Torah, you know, every parsha. Actually, maybe in the entire Torah, you have two or three places. Yes, we know about Yotze Tzava and so on. But the word tzovot themselves is a very unique one. And it appears when Bnei Israel are going out of Mitzrayim. And this is the next source. So the next source is talking about a pasuk that actually appears twice in the Torah. It appears also in Shmot, but here is the pasuk in Bamidbar where Bnei Israel are ready to encamp and to actually be on their way to Eretz Israel as a camp, as a beautiful site in the beginning of Bamidbar or at the end of the Bamidbar. Ele Masei Bnei Israel. These were the marches of the Israelites who started out from the land of Egypt, troop by troop. What is troop by troop? Letziv otam. Nashim tzovot, letziv otam. The careful reader, and Chazal were absolutely careful readers, they saw that there is something here that is connected. The Torah uses these kind of words, rare words, to draw your attention and to draw a connection between two points. There is a connection, Chazal said, or Shlomo HaMelech said, or Chana said, between the idea of Tziv Otam, the multitudes of Bnei Israel, and Nashim Tzovot. Why not? Anashim HaNikalot, like Parashat Vayakel, Anashim ha-ne'esafot. Why from all the verbs the Torah used the word Nashim tzovot? Say Rabbi Tanhuma, I'll tell you why. Say Shlomo HaMelech, I will tell you why. I understand something very, very important from this parsha of the Kiyor. The Mar'ot ha-tzovot has a connection to the tzivotam. Because the tzvaot in Mitzrayim were made by these mirrors. How? So Chachamim come with a beautiful story that we don't know exactly if it was exactly as the Midrash Tanhuma explained, but they know that the Mar'ot, the mirrors, has something to do, the Mar'ot HaTzov'ot has something to do with the Tziv'otam, the multitudes that left Mitzrayim. So Chana comes and said, Oy Hashem, you know what the Mar'ot Tzovot came, right? You know that the continuation of Am Yisrael was because these mirrors, Mar'ot HaTzovot, Elohei Tzvaot, give me a child too, I also want a child. So Chana is the first one to take the Mar'ot HaTzovot and to use almost the same identical word to ask for a child, because this was the purpose of the Mar'ot HaTzovot, to have children. Now I will show you the second idea, which is very similar to this. Remember that the Kiyor, which is talking about the relationship between husband and wife, was also for the Sota, for the woman that the husband, for the wife that the husband suspected there, and they are going through the ceremony. And you know what? If you look carefully here, and this is something actually only when I prepared this shiur, I said, you know what? If I'm right, there must be some connection between the story of Sota and this one. And let's see for a second. I'm afraid that I did not put it here, which will be really, really chaval. No, maybe yes. Wait, this is the one. So when we read the parsha of Sota, So v'ikribo ta'kohen, the kohen brings this sota v'lakach ma'im kedoshim. He takes like holy water, sacral water from the kior. And then when he talks to her, he says to her the following. Here the priest shall administer the curse of adjuration to the woman. What does he say to her? Hashem is going to curse you. In what way? Betet Hashem et yerechech nofelet ve'et bitnech tzava. This is the only time in the Torah, almost, we are going to see the other times is in the next pasuk, that we use the word of something of collapsing or twisted in the word tzava, ve'et bitnech tzava. Tzadik bet, tzivot, mar'ot tzovot, tzvaot, bitnech tzava. Ubau amayim ha'maririm ha'ele b'me'aych litzbot baten, to enter your body. You see, the Torah itself, you have to be a careful reader, or maybe more important, a careful listener, to find the tzaddik and the bet in this psukim to show how the Torah, in a very beautiful, gentle, subtle way, the Torah is telling you or asking you, inviting you to find the connections. Chachamim were excellent in this. This little hint for them was everything. So we find in the Kiyor, in the Parsha of Sota, as you said before, like the story of Chana, we all see, or the Yetziat Mitzrayim, Letzivotam, we see this Tzadik and Bet that forming this idea of connection between all these sources, which I find very remarkable. So Rabbi Tanchuma took all these materials, and like an artist, he built the full picture from the material that the Torah is giving him. There is a connection always of tzvaot to multitude of people, mar'ot tzvaot, interesting verb and not well explained. But we have also the tzaddik and the bet appears in the parsha of Sota, which also had to do something with the kior. So Rabbi Tanchuma is just connecting all these sources to create this beautiful picture of connection between all the three. The kior was actually a place of showing the special relationship between husband and wife that we know from Shir HaShirim is the model to explain the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel. So the kior now looks a little bit different, not like something minor, something to come to serve something else. The kior is a vessel that is unique by presenting the special relationship between husband and wife, which is a basis to Asherat Shechina, and we are going to talk about it in a second, and the relationship between Bnei Israel and Hashem. You all know the famous drasha of Rabbi Akiva, that ish ve'isha zachu shechina beinehem. What does that mean? When a couple, a Jewish couple, build a bayit ne'eman, it's a place that Hashem is dwelling. And the kiyor represent it. On the contrary of what the Ibn Ezra said, yeah, we don't care about like the mirror, it's all like vanity, it says they threw it away. No. The good relationship between husband and wife that needs to be maintained. This is a model how we have special relationship with Hashem. And therefore Hashem say, this is the most important to me. And indeed, if you want to see why the Mishkan was very, very important, you have to learn the story about the temple that Shlomo HaMelech built. It's interesting to note, and I think I'm not mistaken by saying it, that the vessel that is described most elaborately in the building of the Temple of Shlomo is actually the kior. We are not going to go over the entire psukim, but I will say the following. First of all, this is a beautiful picture, I think, from Machon HaMikdash that you have on the source sheet in source number 10. It was a massive beautiful piece of art with thousands of thousands of a liter cube of water. Obviously, the Mishkan of Shlomo was much bigger. By the way, there were 10 structures like this in the Mishkan of Shlomo, because in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, everything was like 10 times bigger than the Mishkan in the Midbar. And as Chazal ironically said, it just shows you that sometimes love in a small place is much more important than the glorious building that people are built to themselves and don't last forever. The Mishkan, this little Mishkan, Hashem appeared all the time to Moshe Rabbeinu. He spoke to Bnei Israel. The Temple of Shlomo, not so much. Because what really important in a house, in any house, and especially in the house of God, is a relationship inside. So the Mishkan was poor and you know, not so impressive compared to the Temple of Shlomo HaMelech, but the relationship between Bnei Israel and Hashem were on a completely different level. Chazal, I can't remember, I think it's Masechet Gittin, actually, the Gemara says a beautiful expression that people used to say. When we were young, we could sleep together on a sharp knife. Like, we didn't need much space to sleep together. When we got older, even a bed, a king-size bed, was not enough for us. Which Chachamim say, this is a difference between the Mishkan and the Midbar. Like this, like the space of a sharp knife, very small. But what kind of relationship they had with Hashem in the Midbar, or at least at the beginning, before the sins, compared to the Mishkan of Shlomo, that indeed was like the king-size bed, but there was no intimacy like it was in the Midbar. So if we open here source number 10 in Kings 1, we are going to see something very, very interesting about the basis of the Mishkan, of the Kior, I'm sorry. And it say the following. I split the screen to two. I'm interested in both. Let me just close this one. And we are going to see the psukim of the describing the kior. Yeah. So ve'et hayam ha'echad, like the basin or the tank, as they call it here, they had 12 kind of ox that carried it on their shoulders. So Shlomo HaMelech, you saw in the picture, did like 12 agalim, 12 or shvarim, oxen that carried the basin. All of it, nechoshet memorat, like the best copper around. And here is the whole description, but I want to show you what they had on this. When he talks about the beautiful kior. Okay. I want to take one pasuk because you can see here, it's almost half the chapter is talking only about the kior. You will not see this description to the beautiful kruvim, to the beautiful Aaron that that Shlomo brought in. You will see it about the kior. So he said the following, Vayifatach al haluchot yedoteah. So the artist who built this basin, this tank, they put all kind of art creation on the kior from the outside. I don't know if you happen to be in Florence and you see like the, it's not nice to say, but the beautiful gates of the Duomo. They have like tons of bronze into these beautiful doors. So the, if we can compare, the apparently the same art that went into these beautiful doors of the Duomo, or you can see in Rome in some places, in the Mishkan, they also made sure that the kior was beautiful. What did we have on it? Kuvim, arayot, and we already remember the ox that was under the tanks. V'timorot kemar ish veloyot sabi. We are going to explain these hard words. Kemar ish veloyot misaviv. But you can see that the kior was actually something that was taken from where? From the Merkava in Yechezkel. because that's exactly how the Merkava, the way Hashem is moving from one place to another. We know that the Merkava was one side Aryeh, one side it was Shor, one side it was like a face of a person. In other words, Shlomo HaMelech just give content into the Kior that the Kior represent actually the special relationship between Bnei Israel and the Merkava. What is the Timrot Ish Veloyot? And we will have to stop here the Shiur when we finish it. So Chachamim did not know how to explain it. In the Gemara in Masechet Yoma say the following, and it is written according to the space of each with Loyot. The Gemara asks, what is the meaning of according to the space of each with Loyot? So Rav Shila said, he explained the Pasuk in the following way. It means like a man join and clinging to his Levaya. Levaya means the one who accompany him, his wife, his partner, his wife. In other words, the cherubs on the Kior appear to be embracing one another. Can you imagine something like this? Like you go to the Mikdash and on the Kior, the place of Tahara, like the artist made it like husband and wife hugging in a very intimate way each other. Now we know where this idea comes from, because this was in the Mishkan, the Mar'ot HaTzuvot, that came to speak about the relationship between husband and wife and Mitzrayim. So Shlomo continued it in a big way, in a very artistic way, in the Kior that he did. And Chachamim said, on top of this Midrash, Reish Lakish said, when Gentiles destroyed the second temple and entered the sanctuary, they saw these drawings of cherubs clinging to each other. They peeled them from the wall, because this imagery was not only on the Kior, it was also on the Masach, it was like the tapet, the paper wall that was all around the Mishkan. And they were appalled by it. They took them out of to the market and say, these Jews, whose blessing is a blessing and whose curse is a curse, due to their great fear of God, should they be occupied with such matters, making images of this kind? You understand what happened here? The Gemara is telling us that the Goyim, when they came into the Mikdash, they were shocked. They thought like the Jews are, you know, doing all kinds of holy things. They did not expect to record this intimacy between husband and wife in the most important place of the Jewish people. But we know what it is. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu also was in the first moment was like, what? I'm not going to take the Mar'ot HaTzovot. And Hashem is telling him, you are wrong. You are very, very wrong. This is the most important thing to me, and you will take it and you will build a Kior that will represent the peace between husband and wife. Because this is a basis to my residence in this world, the family, the Jewish family, the husband and the wife. I see that we already like took 5 minutes from your time, but I will invite you to open source 13 and 14, beautiful piece of Rabbi Soloveitchik, who just give in his unbelievable way some more depth into this idea that what we sometimes think is mundane, secular, profane, for Hashem, it's completely, in his eyes, it's completely differently. It's lack of our understanding. So let's summarize what we saw today. We saw the mysteries of the Mishkan that lead us to the conclusion that indeed the Kior was different from all the other Kelim, while all the other Kelim were indeed for Hashra'at Shechina, which is very true. The Kior maybe was a way to express the big idea of the entire Mishkan, the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel. And maybe this is the reason also why there was no description of the Kior. Because you know what? Many things we do in life, we can give it to measure it. We can give you meters and centimeters. Relationship, you cannot measure. You know, relationship is something that comes from us, and each one of us develop different relationship and different depths of relationship. So the Torah cannot describe it. Therefore, the kior does not have instruction how to build it. It's something that depends on the relationship of Bnei Israel and Hashem. So this is a kior. This is a mystery behind the kior. This is the reason why Shlomo HaMelech did the kior and describe actually the kior in such elaborate way, because the kior was not a secondary one. It was the big idea behind the entire Mishkan. Thank you so much for listening. It was always a pleasure. Rabbi Kelman, I have to say kol hakavod that, you know, you are running it with your lovely wife for so many years. You bring such a great bracha to the community. Yashar koyach for this. And I wish that you, your wife, and all the lomdim will continue for many years to enjoy the highest level of learning Torah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, yashar koach. Okay, we'll read the Rav and Halachic Man I saw on our own. And okay, thank you. All right, this with the Parshat HaShavua, Kior, yeah, okay. Next week's Parshat HaShavua will be given by Rabbi Shaul Robinson from Lincoln Square Synagogue. Next year, tomorrow morning, please God, my continuing shiur on the Seder. We are in the middle of Korbanot, actually. We'll be discussing the Korban Tami tomorrow, which you will also be laning that it's Rosh Chodesh Adar tomorrow. So we've been slowly going through. I think there's some nice things. Everybody's welcome. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Sunday morning, Rabbi Liptak continues his series on how the Nevi'im understood the Chumash, the psalmist and the prophets as exegetes. And tomorrow he'll be discussing part two on Sunday, I mean, how Yeshayahu understood Sefer Bereshit. And we'll go through all the regular shiur in the week. Monday morning, Lindsay Guhart's getting towards the anniversary of Islam for Jews, what the Jews should know about Islam. Mark Shapiro's continuing class on the traditional responses to Reform Judaism. And then Tuesday morning, Aaron Kohler, part five, actually, of his wonderful series on Megillat Esther, followed by Rachel Sharansky-Danziger on Sefer Shmot and the ins and outs and liberties, followed by Alex Israel and Elio at 1 p.m. And then Wednesday, the last of our series now for Jewish communities around the world, will be in Barcelona, Spain. After our travels around the world, we were in Budapest this past week. Budapest, of course, Hungary's already borders on Ukraine. Europe is undergoing massive changes. Let's hope we should hear good news. And then Thursday morning, Shuli Mishkin, and back to Parsha, I said the week. So that pretty much covers up our shiur, and we hope to see you. And please invite a friend. Oh, Rabbi, actually, Rabbi Kumar, I didn't write. I don't know if you took a look at any of the questions in the chat box. If you quickly take a look, if you want to address them. Yeah, I'm just looking myself now. If you want to take a minute or two, and those who want to stay behind to listen, of course.
Yeah, so first of all, the people, I don't want to take more of your time, but I really want to explain the story with Hannah. By the way, who was the one who asked me or comment on this one? This is a very profound comment, but I will say the following. In Sefer Shmuel, we see one of the hardest parashot. The children of Eli HaKohen was a Kohen Gadol, are described as anashim, et ha-kohanim, asher ishkebu et anashim atzovot. They were asleep with the women who came to Oel Moed. Now, Chachamim were very disturbed by this description of the Tanakh itself. And by the way, this I'm sure that you heard more than once, that our Bible describes people as they are, with their greatness and weaknesses. And is not afraid to describe the greatest people with their weaknesses. And you know what? It's very comforting, because we have to know we try to be perfect. We are not. We try to be perfect. That's the purpose of our life. But Chachamim were very, very disturbed, because when Eli hear about it, that his children are sleeping with the women who are coming to Oel Moed, he tells them, you know, lo tova shmua, it's not so good what I hear. Well, this is like a scandalous thing. Like, can you imagine today, like me too, like something like this will happen? And there will be no revolt by the people. The Torah describes it the you know, nashim tzovot. They are eshetish. They are coming to the Mishkan, and they are the children of the Kohen Gadol are sleeping with them. So Chachamim say, and number two, when the Malach come to rebuke Eli, he does not say a word about it. Now, the Mefarshim said, is it possible that the Malach came and rebukes the children of Eli for taking too much of the korbanot? You talk about taking too much of the korbanot. They are sleeping with the women in Oel Moed, and you ignore it altogether. So Chachamim learned from here that, of course, they did not sleep with the Nashim Tzobot. That's a little bit, too much. What did it mean? Somehow, they did not let them go home on time. I'll explain it. I'm sure that each one of us, it happened that he went to the bank or to a store at 6:30, and when he comes, like, the doors are closed. And you knock on the door, please, please, it's very, very important. And they say, sorry, like, that's it. We have to go home. Usually it's not the owner, because he would like to make some more money, but his worker want to go home. So Chachamim described something like this that happened in the Mishkan. People came all day long to bring the korbanot of Yoledet so they could go home. And after the korban, they were tahor. They could sof after a long time to exercise, sexual discourse with their husband. But the Kohanim said, sorry, 5 o'clock, it's the end of the day. We don't bring any korbanot anymore. So these women had to wait for the next day. They used to stay in the Mishkan of Shiloh. And that's for Hashem or for the Nevuah. You don't let women to go back to their homes to be with their husbands. This is considered like you slept with them. That's how Chachamim understand the severity of the Pasuk. They exclude the idea that they indeed slept with them. That's impossible. But it considered as if they did so by not letting them go home and to be with their husbands. As I said before, where Chachamim take this idea? Because again, we see that when Chana is coming and she talks about Hashem Tzvakot Re'e Be'oni Amatecha, why she used this word? Chachamim said she was the first one to call Hashem Hashem Tzvaot. It all goes to the same idea. What happened in the Mishkan is the place that actually supposed to make peace between husband and wife. The Kiyor, the Mar'ot HaTzovot, all come for one purpose, to maintain this special relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel, which is modeled by the relationship between husband and wife. And therefore, Chana indeed understood it, as I said, from our Parsha, that having children, having this normal lifestyle between husband and wife, maintaining this intimacy, is not something against what Hashem wants from us. On the contrary, it's exactly what Hashem wants us to do. And therefore, the story of Chana is connected in two ways. Number one, she understood the secret of Tzvaot, the Mar'ot HaTzovot, the desire for children. And she pressed the button, so to speak, of Hashem. You gave already with this kior, you gave children to Bnei Israel. Give me a child, which Hashem listened to. And at the same time, to show what was the overall atmosphere at this time, where the Kohanim did not understand the purpose of the Mishkan. The purpose of the Mishkan, Bnei Eli missed the whole point of the relationship between Bnei Israel and Hashem. And how you know about it? Because they misunderstood the relationship between husband and wife. If they would appreciate it, they would stay until the last moment to take all the korbanot of the Yoledet and to bring them. There is no a day between 9 to 5. If you really appreciate the Jewish family, you work from Hanetzach Chama Ad Shkiat HaChama. You don't go home and say, sorry, I don't take your korbanot anymore. Wait for the next day. So I think that's another way to connect the picture between the Ma'ot HaTzovot, the Bnei Mitzrayim, Bnei Israel Yotzim Al Tzivotam, the Parsha of Sota, which is Bitnech Tzava, and the Tfilah of Chana, Hashem Tzvakot Alo Tireh Be'oni Amatecha. Okay? I hope I answered this question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll see you tomorrow, Rabbi Gilman.
Yes, please. 7:25, minions 5 minutes early tomorrow. Oh, yeah, so the
that's it. Okay. I wish everyone a Freilich Purim and a Freilich month. You know, after these 2 years, I think we all deserve some simcha, isn't it?
Yes. I see the Beit in Toronto is having a Purim Suda this year. They sent out, you know, after 2 long years, they're back to, you know, having Sudas. I don't know. It's a little different. Everybody, the people in America know in Canada were a little bit more cautious in our reopening. I don't know how to put it, I guess.
Shabbat Shalom and Chodesh Tov to everyone.
Chodesh Tov, okay.
Chodesh Tov, Yishkayach. Chodesh Tov.
Okay. Chodesh Tov, everybody be well.
Thank you.
Okay, Laila Tov, we'll see you soon.